TV is and sex are like they're battling because I'm a Game of Thrones kind of guy.
David, football David,
the Dave Dameshek Football Program, available on iTunes and at DaveDameshek.NFL.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. We are in championship season here in June. It's June now, right? It is officially June. Okay, we're here in championship season here in June. NFL season now fewer than 100 days away. In the meantime, there's pro basketball, there's pro hockey, and there's always the game of life, as you just heard Maurice Jones-Drew talking about there on our little life quiz that we like to issue here and there. Maurice, a surprise visitor to Studio 66 after, 3 weeks or so away. What a pleasure to see him. Go back, dig that one up. Matt Money Smith, Cynthia Freeland, Maurice and I chop it up. Pro football, we go in on the Houston Texans quite a bit. Their fate, their pending fate, I guess I should say, at QB and beyond. Cynthia synthesizes that team and DeAndre Hopkins specifically for us. We do a fun little NBA conversation, and we tackle some bathroom policy, some public bathroom behavior, do's and don'ts. And beyond, some music review from the great Matt Money Smith, former music guy, professional record guy. What was his title? I don't remember. Anywho.
Professional record guy works.
Yeah.
That sounds good, right? Yeah.
It's on the business card.
Yeah. You hear two voices there. Let's introduce them right now so we can jump in on today's action. We got a lot for you. We're going half empty, half full. The state of the Tennessee Titans. They make sense because we've been watching, or at least I've been watching, and apparently a lot more people than usually watch NHL hockey, the Stanley Cup final underway. Somehow the Pittsburgh Penguins, for whom I root. I've mentioned that I'm a Penguins guy.
Are you
the Pittsburgh guy?
Are you from?
What?
Pittsburgh? I am, yeah.
You like teams from Pittsburgh?
I do. It's funny because you feel like, well, you have those conversations, but you don't remember. Oh, was that with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I root
you
for,
are that guy.
Yeah,
oh,
I root for,
yeah.
I root for okay. Pittsburgh.
We've talked
a lot
about
of Steelers fans
means.
Around here.
Ah, it's all making sense now.
Let me tell you something. As we sit here in between games 2 and 3, I can't believe that the Penguins lead the series 2-0, let alone even are at .500 in this series. They've been dominated, and yet they've scratched out a couple victories. But I don't suspect you want to hear me talk about puck right now when we can talk about the NBA Finals and some pro football here. We're going to dig in on that one. Real quick before we do that, I want to mention I was on Adam Carolla's show this week, my twice-monthly appearances. This latest one went in there and yapped with the gang there. Go dig that one up, adamcarolla.com. And something that we talked about with Bald Brian from the Carolla show recently, we were talking about one of my favorite subjects, actor movie streaks, and somebody floated Jim Carrey's run from 94 to 98, and there's some fine ones in there, but one of them is Wedding Crasher. I said Batman Forever is pretty good, and people said that's a terrible movie, it's overrated. And then somehow we got in. Oh, because Jim Carrey's in Batman Forever. That's how. So then it veered.
The Riddler,
in.
Right?
Then it veered into that, right? And then I said, and then somehow we got into Wedding Crashers. Oh, comedies. Comedies don't. I said Ace Ventura, Nature Calls. That's what it was. That was. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Refreshing the conversation for you and for Dave. Dave's own brain. Wedding Crashers, I said, people said, well, comedies you can't really evaluate because they get dated quickly. Like Wedding Crashers, I said, well, Wedding Crashers was overrated. Let's get the opinions here and now of our two guests, starting off with one of my favorites here at NFL Media. He is a Texas native. He wears that on his sleeve, even vouches for Whataburger over in and out. I've never had it, but people have assured me that's loco. Talk, but anyhow, here he is, everybody.
Get a rope.
Mark Iztok.
Yo,
move.
What up?
He's wearing a Dallas Cowboys T-shirt.
If I'd known you were a Steelers fan, I might have not worn it today.
You know what? Look at what I'm wearing.
Oh,
I'm wearing the greatest voice in broadcasting history, Cope, Myron Cope. The terrible towel is poised to strike, and so are the Steelers.
You guys are partisan.
It's true. And yet, this next guy, a guy for some reason, I think it's weird people who denounce being partisan. How do you get into the world of sports but not care about any teams?
I care about all the teams. I have strong opinions about every single game.
He does have strong opinions.
I was being facetious about partisan.
Let's hear a little music about him. Here he is. You watch him on Up to the Minute on NFL Network and beyond. It's Patrick Claibon. Oh, go ahead. Don't be afraid to boogie there, is
he's that guy who hosts the show Up to the Minute. Every dream he has at night has Jack Bauer in it. Oh. Give your takes, then he'll give his. The arm takes, then yeah, strikes again. Star Wars movies, get him lit. What's that movie you were in? Nobody heard of it. The most handsome man Dave has.
Oh, I almost cut you off, but
he's Patrick. He's Patrick Claibon.
All right, that's enough. Now, yes, I have now taken that out to the people, as I on occasion do, and I've asked the makeup people, is Patrick Claibon the most handsome person here?
They would be.
They agree you're handsome, but, you know, they love David Carr.
Everybody. I love David
Carr. They swoon for David Carr.
David Carr is an intimidatingly attractive man.
Is this? Didn't we establish the last time these two were in that this was the most handsome Studio 66 could ever be?
If we threw Handsome Hank would be a little upset.
What if we added Handsome Hank as a fourth?
I don't know.
And then replaced Dave Damashek with David Carr? Then it would be too much. Then it would be showing off. Anyhow, Wedding Crashers, let's get to the here and now. Claibon, overrated or no?
With any overrated discussion, I try to figure out where it's rated. And I'm not putting it in an Anchorman category or any movie that's really up there with me from that era. So I'm going to say in terms of how much people quote it and how much they go back to it, yeah.
Look for the name. When you talk 21st century movies, I'm with you. I mean, I think the first 10 minutes are funny, and there's a fun little cameo by Will Ferrell in it. But overall, it just is this weird saccharine Owen Wilson courting Foxy McGee. What's her name again?
Rachel McAdams.
Rachel McAdams. I never remember her name, but I know she's Foxy.
She is Foxy. I mean, I think we need to give that movie credit for kind of introducing the masses to Isla Fisher and Bradley Cooper. But I have this theory of inverse proportion on comedies. The funnier it is the first time you see it in the movie theater, the less funny it gets with time. The less funny it is, sometimes the better. Like, to me, the first time I saw Anchorman, and maybe you'll appreciate this, having worked in local markets.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was good. It was, I liked it. And then every subsequent viewing, it got better. And I noticed little aspects of the characters and little
theory.
Things. And I think you could say the same thing about Old School. If you go back and watch Old School, there are some moments in there, just little tiny moments. Talladega Nights is the same thing.
Yes.
That really shine over time. So funny the first viewing, even funnier the 20th viewing. I don't know if I could say that about what
40-year-old version, also a 2005 movie.
Well, you know what? It's funny that Judd Apatow movies, I think that those would probably be held up if you took a big mass poll as the best movies. If you said what's one the key characteristic, I'm going to go with Adam McKay, a guy who was here in Studio 66 a couple of years ago. For the the movie won the Academy Award. I can't think of the name of it now. It was a great movie too. I want to call it The Big Easy, but that's not
The Big Short.
The Big Short.
Yes.
Jeez, oh, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, Adam McKay's comedies, that was more serious, but his comedies are great. Step Brothers is one. Talladega Nights is my winner, even over Anchorman. Talladega Nights is the funniest movie.
It is imbued with social commentary from the first frame to the last, and the improv in it's spectacular. But I think the interesting thing you bring up, if you were to have a Judd Apatow versus Adam McKay, like, bracket – that would be spectacular because
all right, done and done.
They both bring something special to their own genre.
We have done it now. We are into a bracket. We will do it. I love it. It's excellent. We will see these movies. I will say my personal vote, I will serve as the Simon Cowell of the proceedings here. We'll put it out to the Czech Republic, but I will weigh in here and now. I told this to Adam McKay, too. Talladega Nights is the best, and the funniest scene in that movie is when Will Ferrell comes home to find that John C. Reilly has completely replaced him in a matter of hours is the funniest thing. And John C. Reilly doesn't understand why that would be a problem. Yes, Claibon.
I'm just pointing to my partisan nature. Vince Vaughn sucks now, and so that makes everything else less funny.
I agree with that, too. I agree. So, yeah. What? Yeah, really. His career is kind of weird. He hasn't done outside
of
the first
one. True Detective season two fan?
Please don't remind me that happened.
And it's hilarity.
Oh, Rachel McAdams is in it. I figured you would have been.
That's true. That's true. But since I can't summon her name, it doesn't make that much impact on me.
There you go.
But yeah, in Judd Apatow pictures, to me, the thing that stands out about them, they're generally funny, but they all talk about talk about bloated, those third acts. Like, all right, let's wrap this thing up. We came in here to laugh a little bit. We don't need a 25-minute wind-up to the big climax here. Let's just jump to the end here.
He does a weird thing in his movies, though, where he gives his characters, one, I think they're more fleshed out than a lot of comedies, and he also gives them, like, really normal everyday jobs that don't kind of fall into some of the traditional movie trope script writing. I don't know. I think he does something. He puts his little magic sauce on them, and that's why his comedies, I think, last as long as they do.
Well, as we have this conversation and as we discuss this, I'll make mention of this. Bald Brian Bishop, of course, never one to shy from snark, tweets at me in response to me saying Wedding Crashers is wildly overrated. In a lifetime of bad takes, he says, this is one of your worst.
Wow.
Crab cakes and football, he says. And I mean, I get what that's a reference to vaguely, but
I mean, Bradley Cooper is brought a lot of good.
Yeah, he's fine.
Not enough to carry the movie to the point that people hold it to.
Right.
All right. Listen, take a loss like a man, Paul Ryan. You know, have some dignity here. All right, let's kibitz now. And I should also mention that we've been talking about the life resume. You know, one thing I'm proudest of, not good at, but the thing I am best at is ordering food in restaurants. I know no equal in that. We've broken bread. I think I've proven my skills in that department. Anyone who's ever sat at a table and ordered from a server will be able to testify to my talent here. Another one, though, that sometimes slips through the cracks is in fifth grade, I missed zero words, you know, and with the spelling bee going on,
nice.
Kristen Larson and I made it about 2/3 of the way through Mrs. McKee's fifth grade class. Oh, no, wait, that was, I'm sorry, wait a second. Fourth grade. We made it. Oh, so anywho, fifth grade.
Memory is key.
And that has nothing to do here. That has no role.
Let's
in
get this
spelling.
Right, Shaq.
Yes.
Get the story right.
In fifth grade.
There we go.
Kristen Larson and I, neck and neck, had not missed a word. You got a star up on the big grid for every week spelling quiz. If you were perfect in it, you got a star. Well, the stars all fell away, and you couldn't make out the stars for any of the other names up on the board. But Kristen Larson and Damashek, neck and neck.
Racing
star,
ahead.
Star, 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 star. 2/3 of the way through the school year, Kristen Larson swung and missed. Damashek never missed. He batted 1,000 for an entire school
the
year.
The dog swing at the king. You better not miss.
What about that? What's your greatest life skill there, Patrick Claibon? What's on your life resume? Because I contend that as you go forward, and you guys are you're younger people, but you still know enough about the world at large that you realize now that diploma that so many kids are getting right now that they think is going to secure them a job, no one really ever brings it up. If you're going to med school or want to be a lawyer or something like that, all right, then you need the good marks in undergraduate. Otherwise, no, it is one of the great larks pulled on society that you must have this degree. No one ever, as far as I know, I don't know anybody who's ever checked on my, did he actually graduate from high school? Forget about college.
I go.
What's
back,
more important is what's on your life resume.
What's on my life resume? I shut down a pickup basketball game when I was at Troy University, playing in Trojan Arena, went baseline. Somebody came up and contested, and I dunked the ball on him. It hit him in the face. He fell down. Everybody ran off, and we ended the game that day. Probably one of the top five moments.
No, that is so cool. That's some story. I wish I had a tail one half as grand as that.
Yep.
You dunked the ball. You drove the baseline.
It probably was a 10-foot goal, too.
Yeah, and it was. You know,
I didn't think to ask that because I have dunked on those 6-foot rims with great effort, but I've done it.
You know, multiple knee surgeries since, and those days are in the past. But I'll always have that. And you catch people off guard, but there's only so many times where somebody sees you coming, they try to stop you, and they don't. And it feels, you just feel super masculine. It's like out driving somebody, except, you know, they're playing defense on you.
Wow, that's
tough,
you know,
to top.
MVP, can you remember? I declare so the posterizing phenomenon that everybody talks about in the NBA, like, oh, shame the devil. The worst thing is to get posterized. And it's like, well, you're just coming late to try and cover up for a teammate's getting whipped, and you're trying to get to the rim.
That's most posterized.
And when you get hung up there, it's, I don't understand why that is considered the most shaming thing that can happen to a ball player. What was the thing? I know I said it in the football season MVP. What is way more embarrassing than getting posterized? I know.
Getting trucked by Bo Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely takes your manhood. Yeah, I mean, but the Boz went through much worse than anybody ever got posterized. But I know I landed on something that was definitely and unequivocally much more humiliating and dignity-stealing than posterized.
I forget who was on deck when the D-backs were leading the Giants and they walked Barry Bonds in to face them, and then the next guy got out. I think that's like getting – that's worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably as bad as it gets.
Yeah, that is good. Oh, I know what it was. I just thought of it. It is – and Geno Atkins gave us another example of this – is when a defensive lineman uses an offensive lineman to sack the quarterback.
Oh, he just pushes him into the – yeah.
When your body, when your 300-pound form is used to sack your own quarterback by a foe, that's worse than getting posterized. Those guys, that's the one – that's the poster I want.
So to counter, as great as that moment was for you, me in high school pitching, in the windup, caught my glove on my spike, my left spike with the leg kick.
Good and flexibility.
Couldn't get the glove off, and I just fell to the ground and got charged with a balk.
Oh, no.
Take your base.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's bad. So that you don't want that. You bury that on the life.
That would be like the opposite of
I hope
the
no one
dunk
asks about
over someone where they end the basketball game as a result. And that's probably just ahead of the time where also pitching in the stretch and a gust of wind blew me off the mound, another balk.
But see,
this is getting to be an ugly trend here for you. You fell off the mound twice.
But the reason those are accomplishments is because obviously Marcus Took has overcome those.
Yeah.
Become an
barely.
Awesome dude.
Oh, barely.
Yeah. It's, you know, I had a moment of shame out on the hump in Little League too. I once was perfect through, I always forget if it was three. I think I was perfect through three innings. And the only reason they would pitch me in Little League is the second pitch. You remember how you had two Little League games a week. Our good guy was Aaron Grendel. He was really good. He was a phenomenal athlete. And he was dominant. He would throw it. When he wasn't pitching, they would put him at shortstop. And, man, he would whip it over from shortstop. And sometimes I would play first base. And that was scary stuff for me when Aaron Grendel would heave it as hard as he could. I'd be like, take it easy, man. You know, that's hard for me to catch. Anyhow, sometimes I would pitch too. And one time I'm out there pitching, and like I say, perfect through three. Then I walk the bases full with nobody out. The only girl in the league comes to the plate, and the first pitch, I plunked her. Not on purpose, you understand.
Dave.
Not on purpose.
Dave.
That was my day. That was the end of my day. Skip came out and took me out of the game after that one. All right, let's do it. What do you think, MVP? Should we jump into some pro football talk? Let's not wait another moment here. Let's get to it. We've been doing it through the offseason here. The draft is in the books. So is free agency. Some changes will no doubt occur between now and kickoff week one for the Tennessee Titans. But let's evaluate where they are in the here and now. It's time for half empty, half full, the Titans edition. And I'm going to start with you, Iztook. The Tennessee Titans, they really have jazzed up the passing game, or at least the pieces in it. You would think that they're going to look different on offense, not going to be purely ground and pound in 2017. And some more defensive additions. This team feels like it's on the rise. How say you, though, between 2016 and 2017?
I'm just curious if Adoree Jackson's not the most important offseason addition for them. You look at how they ranked offensively and defensively last season, and really the big thing that stands out is how poor they were in the passing game. And if, you know, Marcus Mariota continues to progress as a quarterback, as I don't think there's any reason not to think he would, then you think this is a half-full kind of team.
How say you, Claybon?
I look at the rest of the division, and do I think the Colts got demonstrably better? I'm not sure.
I think they did. I'm going to say yeah, that the Colts are a little bit better.
A little bit better.
Than they were last season.
Than they were last year. But is that going to exceed the improvement of the Tennessee Titans? That's really my question. And so Houston, they get J.J. Watt back. You know, the question of the playoffs, I think the Titans are going to be a better team, but I'm not sure that it's going to be enough to get them into the
– That's how you have to do it. You're not doing it in a vacuum. Yeah. It would be one thing to say. I mean, if you – and you hear people, the experts, the analysts, the world over – always fall into the trap that you're avoiding here, Claybon, which is evaluating teams. If you just look at rosters and what happened, you can talk yourself into every team being better. Isn't that a funny phenomenon that almost every team seems better in all sports, any of the four major sports? If you look at them, you
32 teams
this
got
team should
better
be better.
This
team should have a pretty good season.
But
this year.
What's the question?
But you got to look at it in the division first.
But if it's half full, half empty, then it's basically like, well, who are you optimistic about? Which half full is a euphemism for, and who are you half empty on? So I would say I'm half empty on the Texans and the Jaguars, and I'm half full on the Colts and the Titans.
The thing about the Texans. And I think that's where it starts. They, having won the division the last 2 years, that was supposed to be owned forever by Andrew Luck and company. Instead, it's been Hoyer, Mallett, and whatever other bum you can you can throw in there to cobble it together. Now they maybe have somebody in Deshaun Watson. That's what we talked about earlier in the week. They have a really brutal open to the schedule, do the Texans. So there might be an opportunity for someone to rise up and get it. I do think the Jags are going to be better. Blake Bortles, notwithstanding, I mean, you know, I do think this is the year that they start to show some real progress there. So within a division that is compelling and potentially all three of those other teams have taken a step up, I'm not sure where the Titans have to go. Can they transcend second place? Can they transcend 9-7 and win this whole division? That's the I love zigging when the rest of the league zags. And we talk about that within a division too, that I really like when when you step out and try and go different. And you saw the Titans really kind of, I feel like they made hay. And there was a real shot. You remember three quarters of the way through the season, you thought, well, the Titans are maybe going to make the playoffs here because they devoted themselves to really trying to grind you on the ground. I don't know what their offensive philosophy is going to look like in this year, how much it's going to be DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry and then balancing it out with some of those high draft picks in the passing game. It, to me, I mean, it's so simple and lame to say this, but it's Marcus Mariota. In a division where we're talking about Andrew Luck and then you're a bunch of question marks at quarterback, Mariota has a chance to be at worst the second best quarterback in the division this year, right? And then if it's in fact a quarterback league, as people tell us all the time, I think second place should be at worst there the whole division comes out. The X factor of the division to me is the Colts. Do they return to form that we assume? I it's almost hard to believe that the Colts have been as bad as they've been right in the, I know Andrew Luck with all the injuries and everything, but isn't it kind of funny that, you know, everybody just decided, we always talk about narratives. Claybon, you love to get in on these narratives. I know that's your passion in life is talking narratives.
That's his narrative.
I feel like people have a hard time being shaken off of the decisions that they've decided 3 or 4 years ago. But it's almost like people
that Andrew Luck is spectacular, that narrative. Is that where you were headed here?
Do you think who do you think when it's all said and done, who's the consensus team to win this division when all the picks are coming out in late August, early September?
It's going to be the Colts.
I think people are going to be picking the Colts too. You know what? I love that Texans team. I really have been supportive, but I don't love that brutal start. I'm going to say that the glass is half full. Things are looking up for this Tennessee team. I don't know that they're going to get all the way to the top. I think they have a real shot this year. Their toughest games. So they start at home against the Raiders. Tough start to the season, but at least it's at home. Then they go down to Jacksonville. Then they bring Seattle in. Then they go to Houston. Then to Miami. Boy, that's a really rough road.
Seattle game's a question mark, though. Yeah. Like, which Seattle team are you?
Well, Seattle's had a knack
especially
of not coming out of the gate.
How poorly they start, and you get them on the road or at home in Tennessee.
They have road games in Pittsburgh. Go down to.
That's a Thursday night game, by the way, which is key.
Yeah, so you would figure the Steelers, or at least I'd hope, and then they go to Arizona. As well, but it's not exactly a horrid schedule after that first 5 weeks or so. I'm going to come down at
you can find 10 wins here.
boy, it's really hard to do in a vacuum. Yeah, I think you can too. But then again, it always the mathematical conundrum for a dumb person like me is, and yet I'm aware that this happens all the time, and then other bad math people come at me, and I'm like, well, just look at history in the last 10 or 15 years. It's weird that three teams from the same division make the playoffs as often as they do. It seems like, well, you can't
the number of mutual wins and losses.
Right, they have to play each other head-to-head, so how could it possibly be that you would have three teams with double-digit wins, and yet it happens fairly regularly in the NFL? So it's, I'm thinking, well, Colts and Texans, well, that how are they? Would they break through if that's the case? But it's conceivable all three would be good.
Hey, let me ask you a question, though, because when you do look at where they ranked offensively last year, third in the rush game, 25th in the passing game, can they get by without a significant improvement in the passing game?
Well, I mean, Corey Davis better hit the ground running. You know, the phenomenon that the thing that people used to always say is wide receivers don't really take off until season three. That's no longer the case. You can have a rookie come in and make some hay right out of the gate, especially if they're pounding the ball the way you assume they're going to. And a lot of people still optimistic on Derrick Henry taking off, and they think his sophomore year is going to be even better. I remain skeptical on that one. That's the one.
Because he's an Alabama running back? Or just about just him in general?
I still see that the issue for him is that, I mean, you really have to use him, and perhaps they will, and they did last year. I just think you have to give him the physical space to get up to speed. That's kind of an issue in the NFL that you're running back, if you're going to pound him.
And he's a guy who needs a lot of touches too to really.
Yeah, I think you have to get physically to get him going. It takes him two steps to get to top speed, whereas the best running backs in the game are at that when you hand them the ball.
Well, he produced when he had opportunity.
True enough.
In the last year. I think when we discuss the passing game and where that they are in terms of the offense and what, you know, Corey's going to be able to do, it all really comes down to how much is Marcus going to play. It sucks that that's like always the thing that we're always saying about every team that contends. It's like, oh, well, if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, then it's really it, because he needs to be able to develop, and he's an exciting player, and we want to be able to see him. But if they can't,
but do you buy him though? Do you buy Marcus Mariota going into year three?
Yes, just as much as I buy anybody.
But who would you? All right, let's redraft it right now: Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota. Ooh.
On this team?
Yes.
Don't you shrug at me.
What?
Don't shrug.
Yeah, I'm taking both of those guys before Jared Goff or Carson Wentz.
I don't remember asking anything about Jared Goff. His name never came up until just now.
I'm just saying those guys are really good. And if Jameis was hurt, then Jameis would need to be able to play more.
You're right. All right. Marcus, it's not zero sum, I suppose. But
I might say Jameis. Just because I think, one, you've seen how exciting that Bucs team has been. The durability has been there. He certainly had his share of mistakes, but, man, he has that ability to put a team on his back. And, you know, to use Bucky Brooks's analogy, are you a truck or a trailer? I mean, he's a truck, 100%. And not that Mariota isn't too, but Jameis is a bigger truck.
I think in 5 years, most teams in the NFL will be very jealous of the quarterback situation in Tennessee and in Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm.
All right, fair enough. Fair way to answer the question. I don't care for it, but I'll accept it. Let's move on. As I mentioned, Derrick Henry, a real star, obviously a Heisman Trophy winner, back at Alabama. I love talking about the fact that back in for 50 some years or something like that. Do you know the college All-Stars would play the reigning Super Bowl champs every year? And I find this game phenomenal all the way through. I was reminded of it. I knew it existed, and I'd kind of forgotten about it. And then when I was in Cowboy Stadium a couple of years, that's not a name drop, is it? That's not, you know.
No, especially not coming from you.
It's a building. It's a structure drop. Yeah. So when I was walking through there, they have a giant black and white photograph of Bob Lilly playing in this game. And because I thought, you know, as a uniform guy, I was like, what are those uniforms who are they playing there, the Cowboys? They're playing college All-Stars. You can find on YouTube, you can find Terry Bradshaw and the Pittsburgh Steelers playing against these college All-Stars. Maryland's Randy White sacks Terry Bradshaw in the game. Maryland's Randy White, not future All-Pro, future Hall of Fame Dallas Cowboy.
I'm just curious.
Kung Fu Master, by the way.
Real quick, let's just have some fun here. We like to have our fun with various subjects like we did earlier in the week with we'll get to that in a second. I want to read some Czech Republic responses on that, as a matter of fact. But right now, let's talk about this. You guys both love your college football. You love it. You watch it. Maybe a greater passion even for college ball than pro. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
That maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah, you maybe is fair to say.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
Definitely fair.
Who would win? The New England Patriots are a bad example because, of course, they would be bloodless in their determination to shame these college all-stars. But, okay, that's who the reigning champ is here. Or let's say it's the Atlanta. Just for fun, let's say it's the Falcons because they seem more conventionally NFL-y versus the New England Patriots,
yeah,
they
to also,
whom no rules sort of apply.
They also
the way
had a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl on that team.
Right, right. Okay,
Tom
so it's
Brady
fair.
Threw what should have been two interceptions in the game. But
Atlanta yeah. Falcons v. the 2016 AP All-Americans, and your starting quarterback in that one would be Lamar Jackson, of course, the Louisville kid, the dynamo from there, the touchdown maker. Running backs, you would have Foreman who out of Texas, who then wound up – where did he – oh, he went to Texas. He went to Houston.
Houston. Yep. Yeah.
Went to Houston and Dalvin Cook in the backfield there. Dynamic pair there. You have obviously a very nice offensive line. Evan Engram was your standout first-team All-American, the tight end who Ike Taylor loves coming up. Corey Davis is going to be your pass catcher. Myles Garrett rushing the passer along with Derek Barnett. That sounds nasty. Jonathan Allen out of Bama at one of the tackles. Dominance there. And Ed Oliver, the freshman at Houston. So anyway, I mean, obviously, you saw a lot of these names. We all became familiar with them, even if you don't watch college football, during the draft process. What's the final score, fellas? You could also go Deshaun Watson, by the way. I'm just just to remind you, I didn't realize on the back of this page, we have the second team. You could opt for, depending on who your coach is, Deshaun Watson might be your taste, or you might want to go with Christian McCaffrey as one of your running backs, or Jake Butt as your tight end.
Who was coaching the squad?
Let's say it's the reigning national champ. It's Dabo.
Oh, do we got Dabo calling the play?
Sure. All right. Yeah, it's got to be Dabo. He's the champ.
Does it matter? I mean,
63-17.
63. You think 63 is what they would hang on this team?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do.
But I think the more interesting discussion might be if you swapped out Cleveland for pick your NFL team.
Cleveland Browns.
Could a team of collegiate all-stars.
What would that – what do you think that would be?
I still think they'd get trounced.
Trounced. All right. Well, yeah. Quantify.
I would love to say that's not the case, but I just think the gap – the reason those teams used to be able to be competitive collegiate all-stars is the gap between those guys in size and strength is not what it is now. I mean, despite the fact that the weight and nutrition and training programs at all these high-end colleges are leaps and bounds above what they used to be, still the skill set that guys pick up after being in the league.
Well, you might be surprised to learn if you weren't aware of this game previously. This is why I always say, you know, people, some people get on me. Why don't you care about anything that happens pre-Super Bowl era? Because it didn't matter. The college game was superior to the pro game, literally, and I can prove that because the college all-stars did regularly beat the NFL champ. It was a fringy sport until the 50s.
Some of those NFL players, like, that was the second or third job they had.
Right.
And the thing is, this is an all-star team. These guys just showed up like, hey, what's your name? Steve. All right, run a curl.
Yeah.
And they're playing against dudes who've been playing together for an entire season.
In this foolish hypothetical, I'm assuming that these guys, I don't know, maybe we can imbue them with 3 months of training together.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's fair. What do you think is the Browns score?
It's better. I'm less worried about Jordan Lewis one-on-one with Corey Coleman than I am with Julio Jones. So, yeah, I'll say the Browns would win 45-20.
It's okay. So a 25-point margin is not that severe. That's not like
you could almost average that out to a score.
Yeah,
less than a touchdown per quarter.
There's some garbage time.
When Bama plays the SEC schools play that hump week game before their championship week games. Who do they, you know, they usually play. Who do they play? Not true.
Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah, or some bum team, and they whip them 68-0. They call
bum teams.
Louisiana Monroe.
Well, but that's
ULM's not a bum team.
Huh?
ULM's not a bum team.
Who, by the way,
let's
they
not get
beat,
down.
I think they did beat. They did beat Bama at Bama.
Well, yeah, you got to play. You got to play the games.
Decade.
I think the Atlanta Falcons would beat these guys. I think they'd beat them, and they'd beat them handily. But I think it would be 42-21. Is that crazy? Is that crazy to say?
No, I mean it's.
I mean, guys hit the ground. They're playing. I get the physical, obviously. You're not going to be – you have man strength. You'd have 31-year-old offensive linemen rolling over these college kids. No doubt that would be why you would – there'd be no way to offset that.
I think it's the savvy more so, especially along the line. I think it's pass rushers that have more than just one or two moves to the quarterback, and I think it's offensive linemen that – have been prepared for anything that these young bucks could bring.
But these kids versus previous generations are better prepared to go into the NFL game than they were 15 years ago. You know, like those Sooner teams that dominated, none of those guys translated offensively. You know, they needed four or five years to get up to speed. Mm-hmm. These kids are all ready to roll. They're all going to play major roles in the NFL rookie seasons.
If you give me these guys 5 years from now, I'll have a completely different score
for
you.
I think that's fascinating. So fast forward 5 years in the league with this same roster against –
I have to amend this. Okay, that is a fun question. But I have to amend this because I don't want to sound like a complete buffoon here because I will get beaten up for saying that about the Falcons. All right. Falcons win 52-21, and the Browns win 38-24.
You think they only score three more points?
That's a game, right?
38-24.
I'm watching that game.
Two-touchdown game. Browns pull away in the fourth quarter with a second. Isaiah Crowell gets another touchdown in the fourth to establish the final margin of victory. All right.
But now, imagine a Jonathan Allen sacking Brock Osweiler and just him getting up just broken. I mean, that actually could happen in that game.
By the way, as I say, you know, Randy White breaks through and sacks Terry Bradshaw. This is one of the greatest teams of all time. You know, we don't think Myles Garrett would be able to heat up whatever. But you know, I don't know what quarter RG3 would on the 2016 Browns.
I think the also fascinating addendum to this is what would have to happen to make this game possible. Like,
I want it back.
The NFLPA, you'd have to get these players.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be
– it would never happen.
You'd need a lot of money.
Prima donnas. You pay a lot of money. That's how you get it back. That's what would happen.
That's my question. What's that amount?
All right. You don't have to pay a lot of money for underpants these days. That's thanks
– thank God.
– to MeUndies. Go get you some. 20% off your first pair if you use the MeUndies.com/NFL2017 special URL. Like I say, 20% off that. It is time for Over Undies. Oh, so soft on your bottom. With fewer than 100 days until the start of the 2017 season, it's nice to be optimistic about some of the teams that have struggled over the past several years. The Buffalo Bills currently have the longest playoff drought in the league. Over Undy, 14.5. How many seasons has it been since the Bills went to the postseason?
Over.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take a guess at a year?
17.
Did you see that?
I mean, it's awesome.
Did you know that, really?
Yeah, there's a bunch.
No, what was it, 01? Was it 2000?
1999. They lost to the Titans in the wild card.
The aforementioned Titans.
99. Wait, yeah, I can't remember that game. Anyway, so I'm trying to think of that game.
What happened?
I can't remember much.
We probably have never aired it on this network.
That's a real throwback.
All right, let's get to it. It's a not-so-surprising surprise game show.
What?
All right. Time for your surprise.
For the record, hold on. I'm a man of honor. I don't know what this question is, and shame the devil for those who accuse me. My victories are pure. I'm sorry, MVP. Get back to you.
Sure thing. There are 24 NFL head coaches with 100 or more regular season wins with a single team. How many can you name?
How many guys are there?
24.
24 with 100 regular season wins. I'm a gentleman, so I start with you, Iztok.
How many can I name?
No, name one.
Bill Belichick.
I was hoping you'd be wrong right out of the gate. All right, go ahead, Claybon.
Marvin Lewis.
Ooh, that was not a deep dive, but that wasn't an obvious one to start with. All right, it's an interesting strategy.
I know where you're
going to
go, so I was going to get
the
division.
Do you know where I'm going to go? Where am I going to go? I'm going to go with the man in the hat, Tom Landry. Thank you. Iztok to you.
Let's go with Pete Carroll.
Whoa, I don't know. He's out already. What are you doing?
All right. Tom Coughlin.
Wow, again, he likes to go weird.
Wait, is that weird? Why is that weird?
I don't know. It just seems like a backwards way of doing things. I'm going to go with the Emperor, Chaz Knoll. You don't even have to bother dinging. We know that that's correct.
Oh, wow.
You're out already.
No, I said, oh, wow.
Oh, well, you may seem surprised for a second there. Dude, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, you should be overconfident, Dave. I'm awful at trivia.
All right.
Okay. Mark Levy.
Wait a second. What'd you just call him? Did you call Marv Levy or Mark Levy?
I said Mark.
I heard a Mark.
I'm going to allow it. Why is Mark Brady back behind the glass giving a thumbs up to that? What's your staking Claybon, Brady?
I'm sitting here looking.
What game are you playing?
I'm gazing into the steely eyes of Iskra.
We're allowing it.
A little loose behind the
Freudian
glass.
Slip.
That's your business. I'm going to go with a little-known head coach named Don Shula.
Bill Walsh?
There you go. What?
Ooh.
Bill Walsh is incorrect.
No!
I don't believe it.
This is why I go with the deep dives.
All right, so now I win when I say the name Vince Lombardi.
Oh?
It has to be true. No way. No way!
I don't want a trivia game!
What?
Overtime?
No! Who got closer to 100 between the two?
No, that's not how we'll do
it. Let's do that.
We play
on. I'm willing to risk that.
We play on, but wait a second. Vince Lombardi didn't win 100 games as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. No. You're positive of this, Emma V.
Dave is going to start campaigning for the Knoll Trophy.
He was the head coach, I believe, for like 11 years or 10 years maybe even.
But that would have been 14-game seasons as well.
I know, or 12 even. But still, I thought he would have gotten there. Wow, I feel like a dope. All right. Let's get it back. Wait, was Iztok out the last round, so is it just me and Claybon here?
I'd say it's just you and Claybon.
All right, go ahead. I have a couple more here. This is what a humiliation. I can't believe it. Claybon.
Mike McCarthy?
I wrote him down. I think he's got to be right.
Could get.
It's a good one. It was very well done. Ditka.
All right.
Just so you know, he had 89 wins. Don't question me, Damashek.
I'm not questioning. I just can't. I'm not questioning you. I'm questioning reality. I can't believe that. That's
all right, this
stunning.
Space-time continuum.
Yeah.
This is going to be close. This is stupid. Dan Reeves.
That's got to be true. That's definitely got to be true. How about this one? Jeff Fisher.
Somehow.
Dan Reeves one. I like the Dan Reeves one, though, because you had to figure out which teams it was with.
Oh, man. Marty?
Oh, I know one. Bill Parcells. Marty, he says.
First name, baby.
What? Bill Parcells didn't win 100 with the Giants?
Yes.
I want a trivia game. Are you kidding
Where's
me?
Your honor, sir? This is how you celebrate?
Yes, this
Soak
is.
Soak it up.
You're a bigger showboat than Comey.
I'm going to jump on the table like Bobby Flay.
77 with the Giants.
How many?
77.
77. A paltry 77 for the big tuna. I also had Tony Dungy written down.
This is preposterous.
Tony Dungy didn't do it either.
What an anomaly. Dave, I'm the worst trivia player in the history of anything.
I don't get it. My head's spinning now. Wouldn't
you
be
missed Bill Cowher.
Oh, what about Andy Reid? Bill Cowher.
Mike Tomlin.
Oh, yeah, he did.
I thought you were going to go with Mike Tomlin right off the bat.
I would have gone.
So
with
basically every Steelers coach ever.
Right.
Yeah, all four.
John Madden.
Madden, I was on the fence
that
on
was
because
a,
he
that
was 10 year, he's a 10-year guy.
Yeah, 103, so that's a close one.
I can't. Oh, Bud Grant.
George Halas,
yeah.
318 for him.
That was a lot.
How big of a risk was Schottenheimer?
I feel
big risk, 101.
Whoa! I've never been
big
lower.
Reward, play by.
How did I leave some of those names? I just thought Bill Parcells. I thought, like, I'm going to go on forever here, so I'll just get Parcells out of the way, and then I'll go about my business from there. Oh, my goodness. This is a dark day. Oh, Andy Reid, too. Did
Andy Reid, yeah. Mike Shanahan, Hank Stram.
Mike Shanahan, I wouldn't have necessarily. Did Bum do it with the Oilers?
No.
No.
I was thinking about Vermeil. That probably wouldn't have got me there either.
Mm. No, I don't think so. Sam Weish?
Nope.
Man, oh, man. I can't. I really am.
There's only five scenarios out of a billion permutations that would have had you lose that game.
I'm bummed. All right, let's talk about this. You guys are NBA fans, as am I. A lot of people in the world are buzzing about this one. I want to, before we talk about the 2017 finals here and get your thoughts on this, we had a couple of good questions that we sent out to the Czech Republic, and the citizens responded. As usual, the question was, who would win between it? Because everybody's talking LeBron versus Jordan, and a lot of it requires, in my book, the context of the era. And I'm not talking about hand-checking or not hand-checking. I'm just talking about who were the peers, who were they playing with. Give a snapshot of what we're talking about and try and make sense of it. Who would win the 89 All-NBA team or the 2016 All-NBA team? It's easy to say, well, certainly the 89 guys, because that is Jordan, Chaz Barkley, the key detail, Akeem Olajuwon, Karl Malone, and who was the point guard? Oh, and Magic are the point guard. That's a pretty tough starting five, obviously.
Yeah.
But LeBron, who remains slept upon in my book, as much as people like LeBron, we are watching 1 or 1A, however you want to discuss, debate that out, whatever. He is a phenom and unlike a lot of guys who are noted at age 15, look out for this guy, the next big thing, he actually has delivered on that and some. I think you would say
yes
at the time of Sports Illustrated that this exceeded expectation, yeah. Right?
In every capacity.
Even though he's going to be the greatest of all time, this really lived up to the hype, I think, LeBron's career. Anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked with that. Steph Curry is in the backcourt. Russell Westbrook is in that backcourt that we're talking about. Anthony Davis, I'm going to play fast and loose with it. Let's replace DeAndre Jordan as your starter. Boogie or Anthony Davis matching up with Hakeem. And who's the other guy there, MVP? I can't think off the top of my head, and I don't have it in front of me. It was an interesting discussion. Matt Money Smith, noted NBA analyst, said, 89 would handle them.
You say but Westbrook?
I said Westbrook, yeah. Yeah. And Leonard, and that's a key piece. Well, how would they never be able to handle the hand check thing? Yes, we're not talking about in the late 80s, early 90s. Guys didn't get to play with nunchucks or anything. People act like they'd get destroyed. They wouldn't be able to handle the hand check. They learned to deal with it. They're still the best athletes in the world. They're too soft. Everybody in the 21st century is so brittle that they wouldn't be able to figure out how to play in that game if you gave them a little warm-up time here. 89 would sweep probably each game by 20. Don't think these guys are comparable. LeBron's the only guy who isn't severely outmatched. Well, is Leonard outmatched? Wouldn't he be able to check somebody? Wouldn't he be able to do a nice job on, say, couldn't you throw him at Magic if you needed to? I mean, you could put LeBron, you can mix and match with Leonard and LeBron all over the floor for your toughest matchups outside of Akeem. Akeem is the reason that they would win this because there is ultimately no right answer for him. But by the way, there wasn't much answer for him when he was playing anyway. Mm-hmm. How say you, Iztok?
One, I am not that big of an
You're not?
Fan.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you were big on
it. No, I'll watch the finals. But when I was younger, I was a much bigger fan. So it's easy to have that bias. I do think the Akeem factor, and the Jordan factor are the edge for me. Although, you know, that whole LeBron Jordan comparison game.
Well, that's your answer, by the way. Leonard, Leonard checks Jordan. It doesn't mean he takes him away. Nobody took him away, but he would do a nice job on him.
Let me put this way. What a fantastic matchup that would be.
Length and strength for Leonard would be a very tough matchup on Mike Jordan.
Well, I don't see this being a low-scoring game. You're going to hate what I have to say.
Go ahead. You hate the entire premise of the athletes.
I think ultimately discussions like this cheapen the way that we view LeBron.
I love it! I love you charging me with cheapening conversation!
It's the perception. It's because we can see a guy go out average 34, 12, and 9 for 7 straight NBA finals, and it's like, well, is he better than Michael? And it's this asinine conversation that we have to have anytime LeBron takes a sip of coffee, anytime he walks across the street, and it's just like, maybe we should just watch and appreciate.
I get you.
I'm with you.
And it's not that I understand people want to talk about it, and it's something that people talk about in barbershops, and it's a discussion people like to have.
That's right.
And that's our job, is to facilitate discussions that people want to have. But I don't have to like it. I don't have to pretend to like it.
All right. Well, listen, you are in a vast minority on that.
You say who would win the game.
America, because it would be fun to watch.
No,
it'd be great to have a temporal anomaly open up in the universe, and we have these time games instead of telling people like, hey, maybe you should.
That's such nonsense. And by the way, I take no offense in spite of the fact that 98% of my work revolves around these sorts of foolish foolish debates. Listen, we're sports fans. You're in the vast minority, being somebody who, first of all, doesn't have, you know, diehard allegiances, and yet you're still a diehard sports fan. One. But two, this is the pleasure of sport.
No,
for
it's
us.
It's absolutely.
This is what we do is we sit around and talk about who's the best.
And hypotheticals are great, but society can't be trusted with this LeBron and Michael conversation.
But wait a second,
anymore.
But
it's a weapon of mass destruction, and it's horrible. And we've had it every single year.
Fine, but that's
for
not,
way
that's
too
not,
long.
That's not what this.
Don't you
is.
Applaud that MVP?
But that's not what this discussion is. It's which one of these teams would win.
Right.
And so to
but
me, the bigger question
it just comes back to that.
But
no,
in 5 years, it's not going to be LeBron, it's going to be somebody else, and we can discuss, like, hey, what's the offense look like? What defensive tactics do you use to stop player A and player B? Like, how do you attack this team? That's more art of war level discussion.
I would like that, but then it devolves into rings with multiple Z's every time, and people start.
I leave the Z's out, but don't act like the ring count don't matter. When everybody wants to get at me about the quarter, that's another quarter conversation, but it does matter if you win the point of the entire sport. The reason you don't like comparing eras like this, and yet
this particular conversation.
But you like
what about Michael and LeBron.
Okay. But what about also then? The other side, you also don't like looking at how many rings a guy won, which is so then you're talking about the here and let's just sit back and enjoy what's happening right now. All right. Well, what happens here and now is someone is going to win the title, and that will be a significant deed for the players that win it, and it will mark their career, just as whoever loses will also have a check in the loss column of the finals, and those things matter. And by the way, like I always say, the entire point, we're building up to, you know, oh, that draft and free agency, and oh, let's look at who they're playing this year. All that's about who's going to win the Lombardi Trophy this year. It's the entire point of the season. If it doesn't matter whether you win games or not when they matter most, then what do we do? Why don't we just cancel the playoffs and just decree at the end of it, like, I think that team looked best. Yeah, they were the best. They had the best winning percentage over 82 games. That's enough.
That's in no way what I am saying at all.
Don't you shake
I'm saying I like Michael Jordan and I like LeBron James.
So do I.
And I hate that they're constantly pitted against each other for some reason.
Listen.
They wouldn't even guard each other.
Yeah,
so.
They don't even play the same position.
But in what world are you residing in which it doesn't that we don't live in a society where people want to know this or that. I mean, of course that's true.
No, people want to know it. What I'm saying is I don't like it personally.
Chris Power sent us that first note. Ryan Miller tweeted at us to say Westbrook would drop a triple-double on him without issue. LeBron would be the freak that he is, and this game wouldn't be close. We see some lines
what?
Emerging from what generation? I can tell by the pictures of the people who tweeted this to us, how young or old. Who guards LBJ and Durant? No good three-point shooters on the 80s team besides
what?
Chris Mullin coming off the bench.
The whole team
no good
shoot.
Wing defenders besides Michael Jordan.
The whole team can defend.
Where are some of the – I want to hear some pro – those are – I can't believe all the ones that we have I have in front of me are all pro – 80 are all pro new guys. Oh, no, Chris Power gave us – Michael Bello says that no one could guard LBJ and Durant. I mean, that is a legitimate thing. Steph Curry and Kevin Durant would just as they. If you think that's torturous to current defenses, that would be something that the '89 guys would have to figure out.
But this would be a great chess
spacing.
Match.
Yeah, because
the chess match game to game would be fascinating.
It would be great. And who's? How do they defend Barkley? What three or four is going to go defense or Charles? I mean, we forget. You know, it's like. TNT has him tasked with ending racism for something. But he was actually a really good basketball player. And that's something that people forget. And so, like, yeah, maybe some of these young guys could.
About how good Charles Barkley was.
Check out Sir Charles.
All right, he's 6'5". He's not an impossible matchup, and guys are perhaps stronger. Shame the devil. Oh, hand checking. You know, they were allowed to. They were allowed to take spears out on the field on the court back in the day.
Where'd you get a trident?
Yeah. What?
That's what I like the game when guys would get hurt with violence.
Hammers. Who allowed hammers out onto the court here? Like people. Let's not get crazy about the hand checking here. The other question that the Czech Republic weighed in on that we went at first, and I thought it was a fun conversation. In light of Tiger Woods. I don't fall from grace. That sounds like I'm getting up on Mount Pius or something. But anyway, it seems like that the career of Tiger Woods, different than LeBron's, as we said 5 minutes ago, didn't ultimately reach expectation. You know, at least if you looked at where he was 10 years in, you thought, well, he's almost inevitably going to go down as the greatest of all time. He's going to break Nicklaus's majors record. Doesn't look like he has any shot at getting anywhere close to that at this point. Which NFL team or player has left the most meat on the bone, on the figurative bone? And while you think about that, Jacob Grinley dropped this line, RG3. I mean, RG3, and I'll throw Cap in there too. Cap still has a chance to resurrect. I guess so does RG3. But, I mean, just think about 2011. Just think about where you saw those two guys in 2011 and where they are now. It's really hard to grasp. How the plummet. Those are two great answers. I also said one team that is looming, and I don't want to upset the 12s out there, but if the Seahawks are done, which they aren't, there's no reason to think they're done in 2017, but let's say they don't go to a Super Bowl this year, and then they kind of disband a little bit, which they probably will because of free agency. They'll lose some key pieces. I think we'll look back and say, boy, that Seahawks team, I thought they would have won a couple Super Bowls at least, you know, been
felt
more
like
of a
it.
Player, right?
I mean, if you're talking players historically, Bo Jackson to me is the guy
yeah.
in terms of being very, very, very good over an extended period of time, not a flash in the pan, and you saw how good he was at baseball as well, and those injury
yeah. guys, Gale Sayers, you wonder where Terrell Davis would have wound
yeah,
up.
Yeah, there's direct parallels there because I mean, Tiger's body sort of. I mean, we people paid attention, of course, to the marital issues and stuff, but he went.
But his body.
He wins the Open on a torn ACL and a broken leg. He has the back injuries, which we've seen what that can do to NFL players. The torque, he had to change his swing. The RG3 and Bo Jackson things is right on there.
Adam Connor says Dan Marino and the Dolphins. I mean, they played in and lost one Super Bowl. That's I don't think anyone in 1983 or even 1986 would have said, oh, yeah, Marino will never go to another Super Bowl. Jimmy drops us a line. He says, how about Joe Namath, considering the talent coming out of Bama? I mean, he was a legit prospect. They were fighting for him, AFL and NFL. They get him. He's lighting the world on fire. He's Broadway Joe. After the knee injury, you know, went the multiple knee injuries, and he just never really.
And he already had come back from a knee injury before that.
Right. You look up do yourself a favor. You ever get a chance to see Joe Namath in those old black and white Bama highlights? Yeah. Watch what, I mean, he looked like, trying to think. I guess Roger Staubach is a good comp, the way he ran all over the field and could sling it. And Chris Borland, somebody throws out. Here's a great one from Simon, and this is what I wanted to bring up. Is the other one that's out there right now in the league, Aaron Rodgers, Packers. Is this it? If they never get back to another Super Bowl, it's going to be pretty disappointing, right? The career of Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, you can extend that into Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if you talk about 25 years or
those
so.
Those two guys for 25 years. Have
25
been,
years, two rings, three
in a
Super
league,
Bowl appearances.
In a league where – the prerequisite almost for winning a Super Bowl is having a good quarterback.
They've never had less. They've never had worse than the fifth best quarterback, save maybe the one transition year from Favre into Rodgers as he gets up to speed. For 25 years, they've had never worse than the fifth best quarterback, and they might just play in three Super Bowls.
But I think if you asked anybody from Wisconsin that's a huge Packers fan, do those Super Bowls feel the same as, say, Baltimore's Flacco and Dilfer Super Bowls? I think they'd still rather have that continued success that they
I agree
have.
To
but
always
given,
contend but, any year think maybe we could do it maybe this
but
year.
But that almost proves the point that we're making, doesn't it? Seem like we have these guys. They only had Trent Dilfer and Joe Flacco, and like they have one fewer. But, they have the same number of Lombardis.
But
as
how many?
We have.
But back to the rings. I mean, it's more than rings are important. They're great, but being able to enjoy your team week in and week out and having
what it proves is a lot of guys can get. A rank, not a lot of guys, but some guys can break through. Things break just right for Flacco, Dilfer, Brad Johnson, and you sneak one in. The real trick is, there's something to be said for those guys that have two rings. It's hard to make a case that they fluked their way into it. If you winning multiple Lombardi trophies, winning at minimum three postseason games in a single season to get there, it's hard to do that twice in one's career. If you assume 10 to 15 years of playing.
To support your point, how many years have the Packers been the trendy pick to the trendy preseason pick to win the Super Bowl? Because they've got Aaron Rodgers, and we saw some momentum at the end of the prior season.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. All right, So there's that. Keep those coming. We like hearing from the Czech Republic, and we appreciate you responding to our foolishness here. Claybon, well, he doesn't like it. I wish we could jump in for a 60-minute political podcast, social commentary, legitimately, because I really would love to kibitz about what's going on in this country. I mean, I talk about not being able to make sense of things. We live in a world now where 40% has a completely different reality than 60% of the country has. What is the solution to this? I really don't know what the solution is. It's mind-boggling, the complete denial, or it's not denial. They aren't even they're 60% of the nation receives one set of facts, 40% receives another, and they both sides believe, well, this is the true facts, and the other ones are the fake facts.
Did Dave just out himself as a coastal elite?
No, I didn't. I didn't take a side either way.
You are clearly a coastal elite. Looking on,
I don't know what to make of the. I mean, how do you resolve the fact that no one
elite guy I know?
When the conversation has veered into plainly, and it didn't just happen. It's happened over 20 years now, but we've reached a point now where people. It's not. Like, yeah, I skew more Fox News than MSNBC or vice versa. We're now at a point where people only watch one or the other and therefore just flat out don't receive. It's hard to charge people as those rubes don't get it because they have – I mean, at some point they made a willful choice to tune out the news that they didn't want to hear. But now they're only receiving one set of so-called news, and I don't know how you resolve it. How do you penetrate that and make it so – unless these news organizations, I don't know what that's another matter for another day, I guess.
Say 2 + 2 = purple. Is that how you perceive the?
Yeah, but an unwillingness. Well, see, now both sides
see that
hard and fast believe. Oh, you poor thing, you've been duped. You're listening to the news that you like to listen to, but that's wrong news.
See, I get
and neither side is willing
here.
To.
It's all. It's,
I don't know what the resolution is to that. Smarter people than
personal,
I will have to
personal
figure
responsibility.
It out.
People are
bootstraps.
I guess.
It's up to you to learn what's right, and there's plenty of information out there. And if you don't, it's not Fox News' fault. It's your fault. You choose what you watch.
I guess I can turn back.
I
to
mean,
that
they
point.
They try to make a living just like everybody else. And if lying to you is what gets them money, then yeah, that's. That's what this is about.
It is kind of diabolical, a little bit like televangelists or something. And I'm not, you know, I'm not in this case taking a side either way. One is right and one is wrong. One set of facts is either one's telling the truth and one is not telling the truth.
Right, my side.
I'm not
right.
saying which side is right.
My side.
Yeah, I was just
my
side. I
right.
was just using them as, a, as an example wrong. Hypothetically. If NBC is lying to you,
I'm not. For the record, I'm not making. I don't shy from taking a side, but just to make the point, I think that is right. Like both sides definitely think the other side. Like, oh yeah, there's a condescension in those conversations. Oh, that's because you think that that's true. Don't you see that they're lying to you? Yeah.
I think I've never experienced that. I've never actually been condescended to.
Oh,
never.
Oh, yes.
About anything.
All right, give me your NBA pick, Claybon.
Cavs in six.
Cavs. Ooh, how about you, Isaac?
Warriors in five.
I think Warriors too. And you know, I root for LeBron. I like LeBron as a human being, as I say all the time. In a world of actually bad human beings, the apparent disgust that a large percentage of people have for LeBron James makes my head spin. I don't get why he's not a good guy. Because he's sensitive, because you can get to him, I guess, in some ways, that he's human enough that he doesn't deny that things bother him. Wait, and it's nonsense when other guys say, no, I don't hear the outside noise. Yeah, you do. Just stop lying. LeBron's honest about it. That's the difference. Like, yeah, oh, I hear that. I don't like when people say that.
I tell you what, and again, to go back to your tired Jordan-LeBron comparison, I think the strike against LeBron that has kept a lot of people from maybe jumping on the bandwagon, some people who never got over the taking his talents to South Beach, despite, I thought, his wonderful explanation afterward when he moved back to Cleveland,
right.
And that he is not as charismatic as Jordan is. He doesn't have that same panache that Jordan does.
People say that all the time. People always say that, but I think LeBron is very funny in the commercials.
I'm not saying he's not.
The old Nike one when it was the whole family and he was all the different people in the family, I thought he was very funny in that.
He crushes it on SNL every time he gets a chance.
I think I really think he's great, and I think the Miami thing even was you know, his head and heart were in the right place. He was trying to do away with the GM and the owner and try and form things at the working class level and multi-millionaire working class level, but nevertheless, they were banding together doing something. You could tell that he was like, wait, what? Why is everybody upset about this? It was the trappings, to your point. It was the whole thing and the fire and the fireworks and all
right.
that.
But his explanation that I'm a kid who never got to grow up and go off to college and this was my chance to do that, I think that resonates with a lot of people. They didn't see that.
If it had been spun differently, it would have been received completely. Like, this should have been I've said this and unironically.
It's really it's Jim Gray's fault.
I know they're 100 millionaires.
Most things.
They're 100 millionaires, but for real – there, you could have spun this right out of the gate as, hey, you know, strike a blow for the proletariat. You know,
workers of the world unite.
We've reunited. This is how it should be done. You don't have to answer to you know, the corporate heads.
Well, and this is a bigger thing. I think we might have seen this on Twitter together about why people tend to sometimes favor ownership over players in so many inexplicable cases, despite the fact that the players are who we root for.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a whole nother.
That's partisan stuff. I don't want that happening to my team, so I'm going to side with the Cavaliers because I'm a Cleveland fan, and so now I have to hate LeBron.
Because I'd play the game for free.
I think LeBron certainly more than made up for that to diehard Cleveland sports fans. I think all the pressure is on Golden State right now. There's no reason for LeBron and company to feel any pressure at this point. They did what they needed to do, which was to get that one ring. In Cleveland, the standard's a little bit lower. They are good for the rest of their lives. No one will ever say boo in Cleveland. Hey, you did more than anybody else could do for a half century. You're good. All the pressure's on these guys. I think that hunger results in the Warriors getting over. But the one thing is, the Sposta get you. The curse is supposed to. I talk about all the time. Now they're supposed to win with Kevin Durant. Does that get in their heads at all? If they go down early in the series, I wonder if they can come back from that. But that being said, I think the Warriors have an overwhelming amount of offensive firepower. Yep. They will get it done, and I think they get it done in five games.
Oh.
Five games.
Wow.
State Warriors. That's what I'm going with there. Emma VP, do you want to weigh in?
I say Warriors in six.
Give this show a letter grade.
A-minus.
A-minus.
Nailed it.
Good, huh?
Yeah, I like these guys.
Who was the best performance? Who gets the MUP?
I'm going with Claybon for the tired Jordan.
That
LeBron
stinks.
And
well,
I won trivia.
Also the
I won trivia.
Also the game.
Yeah, he won
the
trivia.
MVP
that's
from
true.
Emma.
This okay. Is, he did
today
win.
Today is
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
He did win the trivia, But I think he offset that with his curmudgeonly take.
I'm just pleading with people.
What a curmudgeon!
If you can hear my voice, it's over. The conversation.
No, where the conversation gets sideways is when people use lines like, "What, are you nuts? LeBron was so much, Michael Jordan so much better than LeBron."
That's the conversation.
That's the point. When you're crazy for having one or the other opinion, that's where it gets gross. But listen, zealots ruin everything. Well, that's what I always tell you. And that if you're going to get crazy about the ones clearly, well, but neither is a crazy answer. Don't you see? Neither one is insane to think. So what's fun to talk about, though, is because once you figure out that answer, it does matter to be who is the GOAT. What's the greatest team of all time? Sports fans care. People care about these things, Claybon.
I like people. I don't want to hate people.
All right. See, that's nice. It never results for me in hate. I think that's the problem is that people somehow.
The hate, but does burn passionately within my soul.
I think people make their own poison somehow in their body by they get so worked up by this that somehow it does for them become it does veer into some real hate and some real weird dark emotions. But anyhow, the only emotion I have is glee because it was an A-minus show according to MVP. Thanks to Mark Iztook. Mark Iztook, wait, at Mark Iztook NFL.
Yep.
And then at Patrick Claybon.
That's it.
At Patrick Claiborne. That's how you track him down. Great stuff this week. MVP, Bartlett, and everybody else behind the glass. Check out both shows. Subscribe. Download them. Tell a friend. So on and so forth. Do all that jazz. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, it's been a thin slice of heaven. Let's go, Pens!